to the CWF Gamecast. I'm your host, Raven, and I want to welcome all of you back to our podcast. It's been a while since we've been on the air, and we definitely apologize for that. If you've been a longtime listener and fan of the show, you will definitely have gone to our website of wargamingforums.com, and on our blog there, you'll have noticed that we have all sorts of postings up that talk about our absence and also talk about what we're working on for when we came back, which is now. Today's show is actually going to be kind of a short show and a little different from in the past. We're working to reinvent ourselves and also to do things a little differently than before. We know that before we kind of started off great and did this whole sort of big thing, unfortunately, as life gets in the way, something as big and grand as that tends to be the first thing to go when time diminishes. And that's unfortunately what happened in the case right here. In order to try to prevent that from ever happening again, we're going to be scaling back the show. We want to make it a shorter show, uses up less time for us and for you to listen to it, and we're also probably going to be making it less frequent. Before, we were doing shows twice a week, which was great. We definitely enjoyed doing it. However, it was a lot of work, and now we're going to be scaling back. Don't really know how often we're going to be doing the show. We're trying to get it at least weekly. Unfortunately, it might become a monthly or a bi-weekly show. But we do want to thank all of you who've stayed with us and who have been true fans. People who have listened to the show, who have recently found the show, downloaded it through iTunes, or from our website, from FeedBurner, from Podcast Alley, or any of the other resources that we use on the web. And we also want to thank you for, you know, making use of our blog and just staying with us through this time. I know it's been difficult for all of you, this big gap of shows and content from us coming to you, and want to apologize for it. Unfortunately, life has gotten away from me before, and I neglected the show, and I am terribly sorry about that. But today, we come with you with an exciting new product that we want to do an overview of. The game is called War at Sea. It's part of the Axis and Allies collectible minis game, and for anyone who has played a collectible mini game, you probably played something like maybe Mage Knight or Heroclix or the really popular Horoclix or Star Wars minis, for examples. All of these are different games that we've talked about on the show beforehand. They all basically play the same, and they cover different areas of gaming, different time periods, different genres. They go anywhere from, you know, superheroes like Heroclix to the realm of film and literature and horror with Horoclix. Or they might tackle something sci-fi like Star Wars minis. And that, of course, leaves a whole nother genre out there, history. There's a big, big base of people who are into history. People who are, you know, history buffs, people who are armchair generals, people who just love the past. And one particular part of the past that has a major following is World War II. There's been a very popular and famous game called Axis and Allies. It's originally a board game put out by Avalon Hill and Milton Bradley. And you can still pick it up now. There's all sorts of renditions of that. And part of that, they branched out and worked with Wizards of the Coast to put out this mini game called Axis and Allies. And like Horoclix or Star Wars minis, it has, you know, people on foot, soldiers and tanks and planes, and you do battle on a map. They just recently branched out and have done War at Sea. War at Sea is like Axis and Allies, the mini game. However, it makes use of naval ships. The goal of this is to recreate historical naval battles. The attack on Pearl Harbor, Battle of Guadalcanal, Leyte Gulf, the route of the Bismarck trying to break out and go into the North Atlantic, the many battles held in the Mediterranean and, you know, up north near Copenhagen and Denmark and everything up there in the Baltic. This gives you the option to recreate that. It has some of the most finely detailed models I've ever seen at this scale. I was very impressed with it. I actually came across it last night. I was at Battleground Games in Abington, which we talked about many times before. It was the first night of their brand new War Machine League, which we'll be talking about in another show. And while there, I said, well, do you know what? I could use a little pick-me-up, something to get into and maybe see what's going on. And I'm a sucker for these mini games. I know you can always say a bad thing about them, that they suck your money out because you never know what you're going to get and you spend more than you intend to. And it's true. But they're fun. They're pre-painted. They're already assembled. Everything you need to play comes right in the box. And you really can't go wrong with that. So I was looking at the minis, and I was impressed. I talked to one of the store employees there. His name's Chase, and got some info about it. And I looked at the minis, and I was like, whoa. So I bought a pack. Picked up a starter. The starter goes for, right there, $24.99. Boosters sell for $14.99. Starter comes with everything you need for two players to get going. A quick start guide. It comes with maps, islands. It comes with the rules and dice, advanced rules. 9 randomized miniatures. Booster pack comes with 5 randomized miniatures. So not a bad deal. And I pulled some stuff. I got some actually really good stuff in my pack. But what I had noticed on some of the larger ships, in particular a battleship, for example, I happened to pull a rare ship, the USS Iowa. It's a battleship, one of the largest models in the entire game. On this model, which is very, very tiny, as far as mini games go, you're recreating an entire battleship to scale. The turrets rotate. I was astonished by the fact that, you know, here you have this model, in effect, a model that's small, small enough to play a mini game with. Not only is it to historical scale and designed and painted in a historically accurate theme, but it also has, you know, points of articulation. I was blown away by this. Here you go, you get a model. In the Iowa, for example, 3 turrets. They rotate left, front, right. All 3 of them. It's not the only ship that has it. Many other ships have these points of articulation. Some have more than others. There's a Japanese cruiser, I believe. It has a bunch of weapons on turrets on the front of the ship at the bow. 4 of them. All 4 rotate. I know it seems like a little thing, but for those who play mini games, you're going to realize how incredible that is, that a company such as the one who puts this out would take the time to actually go and put that amount of detail into their models. It's not something you find every single day, because you don't. And something as little as that is actually a big thing, and totally blew me away. But I don't want to just talk about how incredible the models are. Let's get into it a little bit more. When you pick up the two-player set, as I had mentioned, you do get the 9, you know, models at random. You also get, as I said, island cards, which are very useful during the game. They act as terrain, and they can influence scenarios that you play. You get 2 full-color battle maps. They're huge. You can put both of them together for gigantic mega battles. You can have them separate for smaller games. It gives you 8 dice. I don't know about you, but most minigames that make use of dice, if they give them to you, you get 4. This gives you 8. That's 4 per person. It's incredible. And as I mentioned, you get, you know, the advanced rules and a quick start kind of guide. Just something to get you up and going. If you've never played a minigame, you definitely want to start with that first. It's going to be a great introduction to the realm of minigames and kind of get you going with it. It starts off by you taking one ship, your opponent taking one ship, and if you don't want to play against someone, you're just, you know, doing this right now to learn the rules, you can play both sides, and it walks you through it step by step in easy and intuitive languages for you to understand what to do on how to play the game. It goes through each phase, and it's very, very simple, full color, easy to use. The set also comes with a whole slew of damage and tokens that you can use for the game. If you just want to look at the rules and you don't really want to spend the, you know, the $25 basically to buy a set right now, a starter set, if you go on to the War at Sea website, which is over at Wizards of the Coast, we have a link to this in our show notes. But if you go to their website, they have, in PDF format, you can download the Quick Start Guide and the Advanced Rules. This allows you basically to, you know, get it, look at it in advance, take a peek, read up on it, see if it's something for you. If it's, you know, a rule set that you think you might like, if it's something your gaming group would be into, because not everyone's into it. But you know, don't be too skeptical about it, because I know, as I said, that minigames get a bad rap, mainly because of the enormous amount of money that people say you can spend on it, and you could spend a lot on it. But give it a chance. If you don't want to actually buy the models, you could definitely use the rules. Make paper cutouts of them. I know people have done this with other actual games. Warhammer, for example, I know many people, they can't afford the models, or they don't want to paint them or assemble them because they're not into that aspect of the hobby. They like playing the game. They'll have, you know, paper cutouts representing units and models, and then they'll play that way to scale. You can do the same thing with this. If you don't have the money right now to pick up a starter set or a booster set, and you want to start playing it, get people going, and work your way into saving up the money so you can actually buy the product, use paper, use tokens. Get something that's going to be like a silhouette, something that will fill the appropriate area that's supposed to be filled on the game mat. Play a little, test it out, see if you like it. I, as I said, just picked it up last night. I picked up actually quite a bit. Looking at my receipts right in front of me, I bought out Battleground of their starter sets. They had two of them, so I got two of those, and then I also bought a ton of their boosters. I come from a naval family here in the United States. My family goes back to the early 1700s, and every major U.S. conflict, you can find some member of my family fighting for our country and serving in the military, usually in the Navy. So something like this, a game that deals with the Navy and deals with history, definitely connected with me. And because of that, I, you know, spent enough money to buy two starters, and I also picked up five or so boosters right there. I'm not going to tell you what the total was, because it's a healthy total, but you know, anyone who can do math, you can add up $14.99 times, you know, 5, and $24.99 times 2, and then add tax or whatever. But all told, for what I got, and Lord knows you don't need all of this to actually play, I spent maybe $130 or so. And I know that sounds like a lot, but I have enough going for me to do an entire array of fleets, many different battles. I can swap things out. And I have enough stuff for me and all my friends to stop playing. That's not too bad. One thing I do want to point out, this has two main factions. The Allies and the Axis. Kind of a no-brainer. But within each group, there's certain countries that are represented. For example, in the Allies, you have Australia, you have France, or Free France, after, you know, Vichy was set up with the fall of Paris. So you have the French, the Australians, you have the United Kingdom, and the United States. Obviously, the United States has the most of choice, most number of choices that you can make for units, lightest navy at that time for the Allies. And the United Kingdom has quite a few. Australia has two ships for you to pick from. The French have three. And I want to also mention that ships aren't the only things you can get. You can get a wide array of different things, but get that in a minute. I don't want to, you know, jump ahead of myself. But also, for the Axis, you have Germany, Italy, and Japan. Naturally, Japan, large navy, many choices for you to use in-game. Germany, also a pretty large navy. A lot of choices for them. And Italy has quite a few choices, too. When you play, you don't just make a fleet out of, say, all the stuff you have for the United States or all the stuff you have for Italy. You make a fleet composed of ships from your side. So you either do an Allies fleet or an Axis fleet, good or bad. It's kind of like in Star Wars Minis, you do light side or dark side. You could do break it down as much as you want. And if you wanted to do a theme thing, you could definitely do, well, these are all in the same battle group or whatever, and form a fleet that way, but you don't have to. At the most basic, you have the good guys, the bad guys, make a fleet. Standard game size is 100 points, and you might be thinking, well, that's kind of a lot. Well, you need to actually put that into perspective. If you look at the United States, for example, the largest carrier they get, the USS Enterprise, I know a little crossover there for you Trekkies, is, I believe, 26 points. It is a highly effective attack carrier. It's a flag carrier. It's huge. a lot of defensive weaponry. It can hold a lot of planes and aircraft. It's incredible. 26 points. You take something like the Iowa, and I think that's 68 points. A lot of points, I know. But most of the stuff, not that many. Planes are about 6 to 9. You have cruisers and other smaller ships. 10, 15 maybe. And the same goes for the Axis side. You have ships that can fit just about everything. So whether you need a lot of points, a little points, you can find something to fit in. And also, as it is a collectible game, there's this whole rarity thing going on. Is it a common ship or an uncommon or a rare? In each item that you buy, you get a checklist so you can mark off what you have gotten. I have roughly half of the Allies and about half of the Axis too from what I purchased. You can go online, you know, the War Store or eBay, whatever, and find other things you need. But, you know, you could get started easily with a starter set and maybe one or two boosters, and that would actually be enough to get you really going. And, of course, don't forget, if there's people in your area who are either playing right now, or if they see you playing, they'll play too, you can always trade with them for things that you don't need. So if you don't need that second, I don't know, destroyer or something, or a PT boat, for example, you don't need the second PT boat, and you do need, I don't know, a Japanese sub, the person might be willing to trade with you if they have it. It's a nice way to save a little extra money that way and help a friend out or another gamer. Something to keep in mind. As I said, the game seems to be a lot of fun. I haven't actually played it yet. I did just purchase everything last night, but I have looked through the rules a little bit. I'm definitely going to be trying to get my gaming group to give it a try. Unfortunately, my friends, a little resistant to the mini collectible mini games. They like the whole Horrorclix and Heroclix, but most of them, not enough to either buy them themselves or to actually play them regularly, which is a shame. I'm a big fan of them. My friends tend to play more of the, you know, Warhammer kind of thing, or War Machine, which I'm getting into a little bit. But not so much for mini games like this, the collectible minis. So that's an obstacle for me to overcome and see if I can drag them into it. But don't hesitate for, you know, pick up the stuff, like I said, and get your friends into it. If you don't have enough money to get all of them by yourself, maybe you can split the cost with a friend. Go 50-50 on a starter set. You get half, they get half. There's enough stuff there for you to split it up. You both can get copies of the rules because someone can take the printed version from the box. Other person can, you know, download the PDF and print those out. You can print it out in full color. It's not a problem there. You get enough stuff in there. You get the stat cards that explain everything that for the ship, how it works and everything. Just like Star Wars minis. On the back of them, they do like an outline of the ship and they give you kind of a history to it. It's pretty cool. One other thing I do want to mention with it, a lot of the ships are named, particularly, for example, you can get the Bismarck, or you can get, I don't know, you can get, like, a Dauntless Fighter, you can get, like, the HMS Hood, or the Ark Royal, you can get the Canberra from Australia. Most of the ships you can get doubles of and use in the game. Other games, Star Wars Minis, for example, just because that comes to my mind most easily. You couldn't have doubles of a unique if you had, you know, a particular Darth Vader and your opponent wanted to use Darth Vader. You couldn't because there can only be one Darth Vader in the game. Well, this game's a little similar and a little different. Most ships have a name, but they're actually just representative of a particular class of ship. They don't necessarily mean that they're that exact ship. Obviously, there are some ships, such as the Bismarck, that you're not going to be able to take as many as you would have liked. I'm actually just trying to find it in the rules, because I don't know off the top of my head. Here we go. In the rulebook near the back, right before the glossary, it talks about historical fleet restrictions and year restrictions and things like that. The cards say what year the class of ship was created, and you know, you can restrict it that way. But regarding like uniques and stuff, at the bottom of the page it lists all the ships that are restricted in that you can only have four or less of them in a particular fleet. Some of them you can only have one, like the Ark Royal, the Hood, the Japanese carrier Akagi. You can only have one of those. The Bismarck, oddly enough, historically there were two ships in the Bismarck class, so you could technically field two Bismarcks. They're not going to actually both be the Bismarck, but they represent the Bismarck class of German battleships. For American ships, you know, you could take something like the Iowa-class battleship, or the Enterprise battleship. Enterprise, rather, not battleship, but, you know, carrier. The Enterprise carrier, there were three of them in the war. You can take three Enterprise-class carriers. The count will say, you know, USS Enterprise, blah, 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 blah. It's not really the Enterprise, but it's that class of ship. The Iowa, you can take four of them, so in theory, you could have the Iowa and her three sister ships. If you have the points to fit it, you can definitely do it. Don't let it hold you back. Last night, I was looking at stuff and trying to come up with some fleet lists, and I realized that I have two St. Lo carriers. They're about 10 points apiece, and with what I have right now, I was trying to figure out how I could get some sort of carrier into my list without going overboard, because I was like, well, the Enterprise is nice, but it's, you know, 25 points, and what else can I fit in there? So I was looking at the St. Lo, only carry these, you know, one aircraft and stuff, and I was like, but it's 10 points. Like, can I take two, or do I even need a double of it? Could I offload the second one to someone? Looked in the rules and found out it's not restricted at all. I could take my entire list of St. Lo carriers with aircraft on them, if I had wanted. Just wanted to point that out to you, for those of you who picked this up. Look at it, do some preliminary battling, either with yourself or with friends, exploring it. We're going to actually close this session down, this episode of our podcast. We're going to go into more depth of the War at Sea in later episodes of our podcast. Just wanted to do a sort of overview and an introductory, hey, look, there's this cool new game out there. Check it out for all of you. As I mentioned, we're going to be doing another podcast coming soon. I'm hoping to do it next week. I'm aiming to do it next Thursday, if at all possible, or Friday. It will definitely be next week. So please keep an eye on that, because we will be talking about the War Machine League and or talking some more about War at Sea. I can guarantee that. As always, I want to direct you to our website of wargamingforums.com. If you head on over there, we have all sorts of information up. We cover everything from what's in our show. We have show notes up there. They link to things that we talk about in here, or things that we specifically say will be in our show notes. It's also where we say when our next Gamecast is going to be. It gives information to, like, theme songs that we play, overviews, how you can find us, if there's any sponsors or websites we want you to check out, that sort of stuff. It has that in the show notes. Plus, our website has a blog on it, so you can definitely go, and we blog more often than we podcast. Podcast a lot more work than, you know, typing up a post on a blog and saying, click send. So we do definitely put information up there. We also have a great vidcast up right now that we have borrowed from revision3.com. That's a new project of Kevin Rose. He's a guy who used to be on Tech TV, and he is a co-founder of Dig. If you don't know what Dig is, go to dig.com. But he has done this. He does online, like, TV shows or vidcast. It's like a podcast but with video. And one of them on there is called System. And if you go to System, they have this whole episode, which is incredible, on how to get going in podcasting. I know there's many of you who listen to podcasts, such as this one, or you might listen to other ones. And I'm sure there are at least a few of you who want to try podcasting on your own. Definitely head to our website, wargamingforums.com, because we have the entire episode of System that deals with podcasting. The episode's about 40 minutes long. It is video. It can play in our player on our website. So we have it in there. You can play directly from the web. You don't have to download anything. Or if you want to, you could download it. It's roughly 115 megabytes, so it can take a while to download. Be patient with it, too, because when it streams on our blog, it could take a little while for it to actually get going. It plays in Apple QuickTime, so you definitely need to make sure you have QuickTime on your computer, because it'll make use of that to play it. So just be patient, but it's definitely worth the wait. It's worth watching. And as always, I just want to thank you for listening to us, for the time that you have given me today. And I want to say, you know, I'm glad to be back, and there's going to be some more great stuff coming your way. So thank you as always, and keep on gaming. I'm out of here.